one of the guys in our truck could not make it either. I carried him out of the truck and he passed away in my arms.
An Alaskan describes the unimaginable scene at the mass shooting last night in Las Vegas. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 2nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the prison in Seward takes a new approach to solitary confinement.
I'm an outgoing person, and it affected me enough to where I thought I was starting to get a little crazy in my head.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Raven Alaska, committed to customer safety and satisfaction, reminding Alaska that now is a great time to fly. Learn more at flyravn.com.
At least two Alaskans are dead, and another is wounded after a gunman's rampage at an outdoor concert in Las Vegas. Many other residents were at the event and fled to safety, sending messages back to family late into the night and into today. Mike Kronk lives in Tok. He was at the Route 91 Harvest Country Music Festival when gunshots erupted late Sunday night. He described what happened during an interview with ABC News that included pre-recorded video footage of the shooting.
It was very horrifying. At first, it sounded like fireworks, and then my buddy that was standing right next to me said, "I'm hit." And then we knew it was real.
The friend hit was 52-year-old Rob McIntosh of North Pole. According to the Alaska Dispatch News, McIntosh's family say he's expected to make a full recovery. He's one of more than 500 people injured in the shooting. Kronk says he waited for the gunfire to stop before he and others climbed over a fence, loaded McIntosh into a cart, and rushed to safety. They loaded four injured people into a truck and raced to get them to medical care.
One of the guys in our truck did not make it either. I carried him out of the truck and he passed away in my arms.
The shooting is being called the worst in modern U.S. history, with 59 people dead as of this afternoon. Among them is Anchorage resident Doreen Anderson, who, according to social media, called herself a stay-at-home mother and who was involved with the Alaska Aces hockey franchise. Her daughter wrote on Facebook that Anderson was one of the victims. Another was 35-year-old Adrian Murfitt, a graduate of Diamond High School in Anchorage, who commercial fished out of Chignik on the Alaska Peninsula. Murfitt's mother, Ivana, described her son as tall, handsome, and shy most of the time. Murfitt spoke from her home. She says her son was a big country music fan and went to the festival annually. This year, he was celebrating a successful fishing season.
For his R&R, he decided to go down there with his friend, lifetime friend from Anchorage here, Brian McKinnon.
Murfitt began learning about what was happening from one of her son's ex-girlfriends, who was also at the festival, and called crying in a panic and said she thought she'd seen Adrian get shot. Murfitt says she stayed up all night.
We've called the Red Cross. We called all the hospitals because we didn't know if he was one of the ones that was in the trauma unit or not. But nobody had any records of him, so I still don't know where he is. Nobody's called me, but Brian saw him die. So I called Brian about 6 o'clock this morning, and he finally told me.
Murfitt says her son was killed in the first round of shots that rained down on tens of thousands of concertgoers. In videos posted to social media of the assault, long bursts of what sounds like automatic gunfire cut through a performance by country musician Jason Aldean. The New York Times reports that at least 20 rifles were found inside the 32nd floor hotel room of the suspected gunman, Nevada resident Stephen Paddock, including AR-15s, rifles set up on tripods and outfitted with scopes, along with hundreds of rounds of ammunition. Paddock is believed to have killed himself before law enforcement reached him, and no motive is yet known. Murfitt says that among his siblings, family, and friends, her son will be tremendously missed.
He was just enjoying life, and it's just such a terrible thing that happened. It's just a young man enjoying life, having a good time after a hard season of work. And I love him. I love him.
It's not known how many Alaskans were in Las Vegas for the festival. Throughout Monday, stories came in of relatives calling and scouring social media to locate loved ones who's attended, including Governor Bill Walker, who announced his niece had texted him from the basement of a hotel as she hid from the shooter. Flags in Alaska and around the country will be flown at half-mast until Friday. If President Trump's tax agenda goes into effect, taxes for people of all income groups would go down next year on average. But only a few Alaskans would get the big tax breaks, Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
According to an analysis by the nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, about half of the total tax benefit would go to the top 1%. People making more than $750,000 a year. On average, they would save more than $100,000 a year in taxes. But you won't find many of the nation's one percenters in the far north. University of Alaska economist Musin Ghitabi says the state has a fairly equal distribution of income compared to other places.
I mean, we only have about 15,000 returns or so every year that have more than $200,000 in them.
That's fewer than 5% of Alaska taxpayers claiming income of more than 200 grand, according to IRS data. And at the other end of the scale, Ghitabi says Alaska's poor aren't that poor, thanks in part to the permanent fund dividend.
That means that there are a lot of people in the middle. And so if indeed a lot of the changes are going to negatively impact middle-class Americans, then that means there is a larger percentage of Alaskans that will feel it.
The Tax Policy Center says most middle-class households would see their taxes stay the same or drop modestly, though about one in three would see an increase. The White House and Republican leaders in Congress released their tax proposal last week. Some vital information wasn't included, like the income levels for the tax brackets. The Tax Policy Center says it filled in a few gaps with information from previous Republican proposals. Critics charge the think tank's report is based on faulty assumptions. One thing the Republican proposal would explicitly do is eliminate the deduction for municipal real estate taxes. Some 70,000 Alaska property owners use that deduction to lower their federal tax bill. Frank Sammartino at the Tax Policy Center says eliminating that deduction will have some effect in Alaska.
Although, you know, the percentage claiming the deduction and the average deduction that people claim is much lower than in most states.
The vast majority of Alaskans don't itemize. They take the standard deduction, which the Republican plan would double. Republicans in Congress are expected to spend the next several weeks working on their budget proposal to set the stage for their tax legislation. But the tax plan is already having one effect in Alaska. It undercuts one of the selling points for Governor Bill Walker's proposed payroll tax. If Congress passes the Republican tax plan, a statewide levy like the one Walker wants would no longer be an IRS deductible. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A federal appeals court says the National Park Service can ban hovercraft, boats propelled by noisy blowers, within national preserves in Alaska. A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in a decision today says the Park Service has regulatory authority over a river in a preserve in Alaska, even if the state claims ownership of the riverbed. The ruling came in the case of John Sturgeon of Anchorage, a moose hunter who operated his hovercraft on the nation River within the Yukon Charley River's National Preserve. Rangers ordered him to stop operating the boat the boat in 2007, and he sued in 2011. The U.S. Supreme Court in 2016 rejected the reasoning behind an appeals court ruling backing the hovercraft ban and sent the case back for reconsideration. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new effort to keep Native language alive in Kodiak.
It's doing something really concrete that is going to help preserve an Indigenous language.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
The Department of Corrections is the largest mental health care provider in the state, and officials at Spring Creek Correctional Center want to make it one of the most effective, too. They're treating inmates who have mental illnesses with creative innovations like porches and paintings. Ann Hillman with Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk explains.
During his 3 years at Spring Creek, inmate Caleb Summit has been in and out of segregation because of fighting.
And now I've been out of seg for 7 months, my new record.
Summit says it used to be really hard to rejoin the prison community every time he left seg, where he was locked into a cell for 23 hours per day.
Because you're locked down and then you're nervous being around people.
Interacting with other people was already a challenge because he has bipolar schizoaffective disorder and his meds weren't adjusted correctly. But this time when he left, instead of going straight from seg into open housing, called a mod, he first transitioned to a room with an indoor porch in the mental health mod. In Spring Creek, the cells line the edges of one main room. The porches are like large cages around the doors of the cells. They provide a space for inmates to leave their rooms, walk around, and talk to people. But they can't just wander freely in the communal area or have much physical interaction. Inmates are allowed out of their cells and onto the porches for at least 3 hours a day, and eventually more. It may not sound like much, but Summit says it gave him time to adjust to social interactions.
A lot better to interact you with the mod, not just throw you out the door.
It also gave him the chance to talk to the mental health mod mentors. The mentors are inmates from the general population who live in the mental health mod and are paid to provide guidance and support. It's a pilot program for Spring Creek. Originally, three people filled the role, but two were dismissed because they caused problems. One mentor, Kent Matty, says he understands what people leaving segregation are going through. He once spent 3 years in solitary confinement. Every time he left his cell, he was fully restrained with two guards.
I'm an outgoing person, and it affected me enough to where I thought I was starting to get a little crazy in my head.
Maddie says when he speaks with people on their porches and other inmates in the mod, he tries to be a role model and help them learn to trust people.
And the best way to reach them is to talk to them, communicate like they're real, not like they're below you or you got something wrong with you. I can't be around you.
Summit says it helps him to talk to Maddie. He tells Maddie about problems that he doesn't feel comfortable reporting to staff, but sometimes just chatting with Maddie or even the mental health counselors isn't enough to calm him down. Then he turns to another innovation at the prison, the Oasis.
Yes, I love that room. It is awesome. It takes me out of the zone, like I'm not in jail anymore for a while.
The Oasis is a regular cell with no bunks or toilet. The walls are painted with brightly colored murals of beach scenes. Waves lap onto sandy shores next to dense, flower-filled bamboo forests. Inmates can take a sound machine with them and sit on soft couches.
When you come out of there, how do you feel?
Refreshed, ready to try again. I get stressed out sometimes, so I just push a button at any time, even at night, and the officer will take me over.
Superintendent Bill Lipinskas decided to create the Oasis as an experiment. The institution didn't have money to do anything fancy, but he wanted to have a place where prisoners could just be people for a while. A team of inmate artists worked together to paint the room.
If this is what we could do here right now to see if we could enact a change in behaviors and in mindsets and just give them something different than prison.
Inmates have painted murals in other parts of the prison as well, making some areas look like living rooms or storefronts. The porches, the paintings, and the mentors are all part of Lipinskas's larger mission for Spring Creek, to imbue the Institute with more humanity and to try to help the inmates, not just punish them. From the Solutions Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
If you'd like to hear more ideas, subscribe to the Solutions Desk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or NPR One, or visit alaskapublic.org/solutions. Two remote learning students from the villages of Port Graham and Tetitlik just graduated from a Kodiak College Aleutic language program. They're striving to keep the language alive in their communities. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche spoke with them about their efforts.
Libby Eufemio, who runs the Aleutic Studies program, explains the Aleutic Nation covers a large chunk of geography, including the Kodiak Archipelago, the southern Kenai Peninsula, and Prince William Sound. She says the college's occupational endorsement certificates enable students to teach the Aleutic language.
This type of degree is really important in more than just the education level. It's doing something really concrete that is going to help preserve an indigenous language.
One of the graduates, Brandon Moonen, works for Chugachmute, an organization which brings education and other services to the Chugach region. He teaches children of different ages in Tetitlik.
Right now, I think we rated our village right on the brink of extinction for the use of language in the village. It's either grandparents or beyond that actually used it in the village, and our elder population is shrinking pretty fast.
Moonen says he grew up with Aleutic. His dad and grandparents were fluent speakers, but he says he was nervous about teaching it.
Because it's not really something I've ever done or something I've actually ever wanted to do. But since my first week class, I stepped in, I could just see the kids were excited about what I was teaching. They were able to take it right in, and they started using it around the village. Every time they would see me, they would start talking to me in whatever they did pick up in class at all.
His cousin, Euphemia Moonen-Wilson, is the other graduate and also works for Chugachmute. She teaches in Port Graham, a village with fewer than 200 people. Moonen-Wilson believes teachers can bring about a revival of the Aleutic language, or Sukstun, through their students.
With the knowledge of having sentences they can speak in the community, and hopefully when they speak with their parents, their family, the elders, eventually the Sukstun would be a natural medium in the community.
Moonen-Wilson says she loves her students' excitement to be in the classroom.
They are learning and they want to learn more, and that really warms my heart up.
Chugachmute held a ceremony in late September to honor the graduates. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
An Anchorage lawmaker is requesting the legislature's October special session be held in Anchorage instead of Juneau. In a letter to Governor Bill Walker last week, Representative Chris Birch argued it would save money and increase public participation on crime legislation. Anchorage lawmakers and residents have expressed concern over a spike in crime in the city. But for the governor and Juneau's legislators, it's not that straightforward. KTOO's Adeline Baxter reports.
Anchorage Republican Representative Chris Birch wrote to Governor Bill Walker last week after attending a town hall on crime in Anchorage the night before. In his letter, Birch said maximizing public engagement with Senate Bill 54, which would modify last year's Senate Bill 91, a criminal justice reform bill, is crucial to addressing constituent concerns.
And certainly this isn't an effort to move the Capitol or anything of that nature. It's an effort to try to bring some balance and recognize that we need to be accessible to the public. And, certainly at this time, money savings are certainly a plus as well. I mean, if there's three-quarters of the legislature can basically forego the transportation and associated costs with relocation for a month, that's just a bonus.
He added that many legislators are likely planning to attend this year's Alaska Federation of Natives Conference in Anchorage, which wraps up 2 days before the special session begins. Birch said he spoke with the governor and his chief of staff about the letter and expects the majority of the legislature to support his request. On Friday, at a breakfast event at Commonwealth North in Anchorage, Walker was asked why the special session couldn't happen in Anchorage.
Well, the Capitol's in Juneau. Gavel to gavel's in Juneau. Alaskans all over the state are able to participate through the gavel to gavel process and be able to observe what goes on. And so, yes, it would be more convenient to have it in Anchorage. That's not where the Capitol is. And if the legislature would like to convene and move it to Anchorage, I won't oppose that.
Juneau Democratic Representative Sam Keto III said he thinks the request is short-sighted in several respects.
One is we will have to fly regular staff to Anchorage in order to support any activities. We don't currently have a location suitable to have the entire house meet. That would have to be procured. And the other challenge is we don't have Gavel Alaska in Anchorage, which means that the public would be less involved, even though he said they would be more involved.
Keto said Alaskans are able to weigh in electronically through the legislature's teleconference system. He also said that when the legislature last met in Anchorage in 2015, they had the same number of people attend the hearings as they regularly see in Juneau.
Well, I do think that we will hear from as many people on the teleconference line or through letters to the committee on SB 54. I think we have probably a better opportunity to connect with Alaskans if we're in Juneau and we have the ability to broadcast all the information.
Keto said he will speak with his fellow Juneau legislators and encourage Walker to keep the session in Juneau. Juneau Senator Dennis Egan could not be reached for comment, and Juneau Representative Justin Parrish had yet to review the proposal when reached. With help from Andrew Kitchenman in Anchorage, I'm Adeline Baxter in Juneau.
Alaskans will vote in local elections tomorrow. In Fairbanks, three candidates seeking election to a seat on the Interior Gas Utility Board all agree it's taken far too long to bring natural gas into the Fairbanks area. All three say if elected, they'll push to accelerate the IGU's efforts to bring gas here and build a system to deliver gas to its customers. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The Interior Gas Utility was established 5 years ago by the Fairbanks North Star Borough to offer area residents a lower-cost alternative to heating oil and a cleaner-burning fuel than either oil or firewood. IGU board candidate Patrice Lee is a longtime air quality advocate, and she says her experience with the issue would help her move the IGU to more quickly secure delivery of natural gas to Fairbanks and from here to the area's homes and businesses.
The opportunity to get affordable, clean energy to Fairbanks is a natural extension of our need to clean up the air.
Board candidate Scott Eicholt agrees that's important but secondary to the main mission of getting gas here and distributing it.
A lot of folks are focused on getting clean air, but in order to get there, we've got to get the job done first.
Jeffrey Rensel's also seeking election to a three-year term in the board, and he cites affordability as his priority.
We need to get this going so we can get an alternate and an affordable fuel to heat our homes and businesses, and it will help us clean up our air.
The 60-year-old Rensel retired a few years ago after working 28 years for the State Department of Health and Social Services, and he now works as a juvenile justice officer at the Fairbanks Youth Facility. He says that experience with bureaucracy would help him get the IGU moving more quickly.
to make faster progress is basically what I'm looking at. The, you know, going so slow, talking things to death is not what I do. I want to get in, get it done, and move on.
Ike Holt, who's 45, emphasizes his experience with construction and contracting, gained through 9 years of work with Local 942 of the Laborers Union, where he now serves as business manager. Before that, he worked for Norcon, a big Anchorage-based oil and gas industry contractor.
I've got about 8 years working directly with management and contracts in this type of industry. So it gives me the background, I think, to add a lot of value to the board itself.
Lee cites her diligence in researching issues and organizing and mobilizing the community as among her top qualifications for the board. The 62-year-old retired school teacher points to her work with Clean Air Fairbanks and Friends of Fox Springs as examples. And she says she'll advocate for consumers and businesses if elected to IGU board seat D.
Residents must have stable, affordable, clean energy, and our businesses will be more competitive with affordable clean energy.
Lee says she'd employ her researcher acumen into the IGU's proposed purchase of Texas-based Pentex Alaska Natural Gas Company. The IGU's considering buying Pentex, the parent company of Fairbanks Natural Gas, mainly for Pentex's natural gas liquefaction facility in the Mat-Su to process the fuel and its trucking operation to transport it to Fairbanks. The utility wants FNG for its natural gas distribution system locally. Both Ike Holt and Rensel say they strongly support the Pentex purchase. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Voters in parts of Alaska will decide whether to ban marijuana within their borders tomorrow. The statewide initiative that legalized recreational marijuana in 2014 allows local governments to ban cannabis growing, manufacturing, retail, and testing businesses. Tuesday's elections will affect Fairbanks, parts of the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and parts of the Kenai Peninsula Borough, southwest of Anchorage. If the measures are successful, several dozen businesses would have to close. Some in the industry worry that could embolden other communities to pursue bans or cause state lawmakers to consider rolling back legalization. Carrie Kerrigan with the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association called the votes a pivotal moment for the state's cannabis industry. Supporters of the ban say local residents deserve a say on whether cannabis shops should operate in their communities. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, Adeline Baxter in Juneau, and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.